healthy thing as well, that we keep making these policy decisions and investments because it's for us, because of the quality of life and values that we all share. And then that becomes an example. In fact, there was a group here from Thailand yesterday, to the world and to others in the nation about how a city can get these things done. I think those three things, the fact that there's more than the five of us who as elected leaders have carried this torch, that there are a lot of citizens constantly bringing forward good ideas and we're now soliciting more of them, and that we have a habit of trying to create a livable city, whether it's avoiding the disruption of an environmental disaster like coal trains running through our city or building the next piece of the intertwine, we get these things done for us, and I hope we get a lot more of them done. So thank you for this honor. Thank you all for your commitment to this effort, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Aye. Thank you. Of course, we'd love to take a moment and do a photograph with our guests. Yes. Would you like us to do that up here? Sure. We'll recess for a moment and do that.
I think that'd be great.
Sorry.
You can lift it up a little bit.
Everybody squinch together like you like each other a little bit more. Okay, that's good. That's
viral on the Audubon website.
Earl was just sending a letter to the state. I think it kind of
good stuff.
Oh,
thanks.
Okay. So rather than leaving,
You did a great job. Appreciate
Let me just give you a number that you can pass on, particularly to the veterans, but to others as well.
All right.
So this is good for anybody who's having any kind of mental health crisis.
All right. You've been up here, someone that's hard to know.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for pointing out my column.
Yeah. You really made a good case.
If you need to talk to somebody right at that moment, call that number.
Dan, may I borrow your phone for a sec?
Sure. Quarter.
Hi, would you ask Sonia to come in?
Wow. Thank you for having the courage to come forward. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So apparently David
suggest instead not going back and forth about this. Originally, Chris suggested Amanda's sort of taking the draft language from the agenda and putting it on the priority list and leaving the rather more technical stuff in the policy statements. Apparently, David thinks it makes more sense to have this more general language, add the more technical language, or just have it once in the priority list.
Okay.
Chris says he's run it by people's offices. Yeah. Is that all right?
That works with me.
Okay.
Okay. Good. All right. Let me call the council back to order and take up the next time certain item, please, Carla.
Item 122, accept the report on the 2013 federal legislative agenda.
I want to call up Martha Pellegrino and her staff and congratulate them. Our intergovernmental relations staff does amazing things, including getting the governor a seat in the president's box or the first lady's box at the State of the Union speech. That was a coup. Well done. You've got to take credit for that. Don't say anything if you...
Thanks, Mayor. I can't wait till I get a call from the governor's office later today on that. Good morning, Mayor and council members. For the record, Martha Pellegrino, Director of the Office of Government Relations. I'm going to not take it as a personal affront that everybody just left the room for this item. There's actually a lot of great issues in the report we're bringing to you today, and it has been a really good process by which we got to the place where we are. I just got a brief presentation, but before I do that, would like to acknowledge my staff and the team who's put this report together. To my right is Neil Stillstrom, who has really done the lion's share of research and drafting on this document. I also would like to thank Vicki Cram, who is our D.C. representative, who's not here today. But Vicki makes herself available to us on a daily basis when we ask for her advice and her help advancing the city's federal issues. So in her absence, just want to acknowledge her great work as well. So the process we've gone through in building the federal agenda began in August when we began soliciting items for the federal legislative agenda. And we've also done significant outreach to our federal delegation offices to try to find some areas of alignment with some of the work that they're doing. And we've also had a robust community engagement process. And thanks to Commissioner Fritz and her leadership, we had two very well-attended sessions where the community provided input into many of the issues that are before you. And we also had an incredibly successful Advocacy 101 training session last month, I think. Over 200 people signed up to come to that. So there's really a lot of interest in the work that we're doing and a lot of support for many of the issues in the agenda. So briefly, just turning to the structure of the report, the federal agenda is organized in two sections. The first are the city's top priorities, and the second section are the policy positions and other funding priorities. The first of the priorities is the Portland Harbor cleanup and brownfields section, followed by a priority that encompasses public safety, mental health, and gun violence prevention. Thirdly is maintaining key federal funding programs on affordable housing and homelessness. Next is emergency preparedness, and this encapsulates two concepts. The first is reauthorization of pre-disaster mitigation, which could help us expand a pilot that we're doing in Portland. Commissioner Novick and Congressman Blumenauer's office have been helping us get a pilot off the ground for residential seismic retrofits. And it also encompasses the preservation of funding for the Urban Area Security Initiative, which are homeland security dollars that then flow to the region. And lastly are the city's federal transportation priorities as Congress begins to look at developing its next transportation bill. I would also like to, so that's the kind of a quick run through in a nutshell. I also want to, if we could hand out, there's a memo that just briefly talks about the changes that have gone into the agenda since the December 4th work session. So the last time we brought the draft agenda to you was on December 4th and had a conversation about what some of the ideas that have come to date and since then have gotten a great deal of input and edits. So what this shows are kind of some of the new things that have come in The public safety, mental health, and gun violence prevention is a new priority. The transportation item was significantly revised and moved up to the priority section. We've done some tweaking to the language, refinement of the language and emergency preparedness, done some refinement of the language on the LT2 item, also added climate change to the energy environment section, and also refined the language in the immigration reform piece, which is helps us be a little bit more reflective to what the conversation is at the federal level. So that's a really quick overview of that. I think I can pause there and take questions and comments.
So do we deliberately not have a reference to the Columbia River Crossing in our transportation priorities? I mean, I didn't see it there.
It was
intentional?
Sure. Commissioner, thanks very much for the question. Not sort of deliberate or not, it just wasn't anything that was submitted for consideration. And so what you see reflected are when the city's developing its transportation priorities, this is what has come to our office.
I mean, okay. But, you know, I sort of expect your office recognizing the dance we do with our partners in Congress and our partners throughout the state of Oregon and Washington when you see issues that I know you spent a long part of Monday at a hearing down there. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm just asking. It
sure.
seems.
You know, I think
it seems if we want to sort of be on board with what our state leaders and our federal leaders are trying to do, we should at least have some reference, unless we're clearly not on board. And I don't know. I'm not sure where this council.
Well, I think that maybe there may be less to that than meets the eye. In that, I mean, the way this is drafted reflects the new reality, which is. We care about what the federal government is doing programmatically a lot, and there really aren't any earmarks anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, the CRC is kind of an exception to that, and the secretary himself has called it out as a project of national significance. So I guess my sense was this is more forward-looking about the program changes and that we want to see and the things that we want them to keep, like the Small Starts program, or to start finally doing something on high-speed rail, we're already as a city on record and in the region on record as supporting the CRC, and that, you know, appropriations request is in. I don't have any problem with mentioning it in
so
our.
So we are on
yeah,
record
oh yeah.
as a city?
I mean, I believe we are, you know, we are formally on record as supporting the project because of the council's action last year or the year before. So, you know, again, I don't have any quarrel with mentioning it here. But this was more about the programs than about projects.
Okay. Well, I guess I wasn't sure we were actually on record. It would seem to me if we're on record, we should have it here, because I can imagine our congressional colleagues, you know, that sticking out, that omission sticking out.
Commissioner and Mayor, it is not something where the city has been the lead in lobbying on the project. We have not, at least right. since I have been the director since 2010, there have been other groups that have really taken the lead in Washington, D.C., you know, the Port of Portland, a number of other groups. And what we've been doing is monitoring the project, both at the project level, and the Portland Bureau of Transportation has stayed engaged at the project level, but we have not been a part of the chorus that has been active in D.C. on this. So
Martha,
ultimately, it's really council's decision if that's something that you but it wasn't in last year's agenda.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether it belongs.
As a project.
Now that I look at the table of contents, it says top federal priorities. So maybe it doesn't belong there with respect to our priorities. It just seems like somehow, somewhere in this document, we should reference. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I guess the other reaction, I obviously wasn't here when the council took previous actions like approving the LPA, locally preferred alternative, but this is a state appropriations request of Congress. It's ODOT and WashDOT's project. We have a stake in it, and we're on record in support of the LPA. So I guess I think we're firmly grounded, but frankly, I want us to be using our influence in Washington on the things on this list that we really that we have a particular local stake in.
And if I could just second that, Mayor, because I expect we're all going to be asked to come down to D.C. and on some time or another to advocate on particular pieces. And typically there are things that are within our wheelhouse that have an immediate impact on us and not tag-teaming with some other level of government. Lord knows it's hard enough to get an audience with the key people, and we tend to be pretty focused on things that are going to immediately affect us and our budget. So I would concur with what's been said, which is I think the council's on record, but this document reflects current priorities, policies, and things that we will be taking the lead on in Washington. And my understanding is the CRC is primarily the lead in CRC is the dots, the two dots, and particularly the two governors who have it in their agenda.
And I think I'd just like to add that the last time we had a public hearing on this before the council was 2009, and things have happened since then, and we are looking at, as Commissioner Fish noted, other priorities for targeting for federal money. So I think at some point this council should have a discussion again on this, whether the level of support for the CRC, but I don't think this is the appropriate place to do it. It didn't come up in any of the public meetings, and so I do think that we need to revisit that at some point.
I agree. And I guess just to key on that for a moment, Martha and I were in Salem yesterday in a number of meetings. I know you've been down already, Commissioner Salzman, and they had a massive hearing about the Columbia River crossing this week. I think we will know as a city, is this project dead or alive? Is it moving forward? And do the particular local issues that we care about, like the impact on Hayden Island and Bridgeton and elsewhere, are they being properly addressed? And I think it will be very appropriate for this council to weigh in again once whatever revised version of the project is funded by the two legislatures, if that's where they end up. Okay, other questions or comments for Martha or Nils? Nils, did you have some other stuff that you wanted to cover? Or you?
No, we're good. Okay. Thank you.
Does the council have any amendments to this, Mayor, that are being offered?
I believe there are.
For testimony?
Yes. I would like to restore the LT2 relief item to the priority list where it has historically been. And Commissioner Fritz suggested using the language that was in the draft agenda that I will now pass out. And Director Schaff suggested adding to the language in the draft agenda some of the language that was in the final version. And I apologize for not having the complete, having all of that typed up. But the way the amendment would read is to restore it to the priority list and to have it read, the city will work diligently with the congressional delegation and the EPA to pursue relief from raw water treatment and storage requirements of the federal long-term 2 enhanced surface water treatment rule, parentheses LT2, for Portland's drinking water system. The city seeks assistance with the delegation in obtaining the same consideration from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency as New York City to evaluate alternative compliance options for the uncovered finished drinking water reservoir requirements of the rule and to permanently improve the methodology of the rule, which requires out-of-date methods that do not protect public health. And then that's the language that was in the draft agenda. What we would add would be the last two sentences from the final agenda, which would be the scientific basis of the rule should be improved to focus only on cryptosporidium species that pose the highest known risk to human health. Second, any changes to laboratory methods to detect cryptosporidium should ensure adequate flexibility to account for Portland's unique seasonal source water characteristics.
Okay, so Commissioner Novick moves those amendments. Is there a second? Thank you. So those are on the table for council discussion and also for public comment for those that are here to.
So, Steve, can I pose a question since you're the author? What specifically are you referring to with the language methodology of the rule which requires out-of-date methods that do not protect the public health?
I think that that's overlaps with the specific language from the final agenda, but I'd actually like to call up Mr. Schaff to address that.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm David Schaff. I'm the Director of the Portland Water Bureau. Specifically, there are a couple of issues with the rule and the methodology for detecting cryptosporidium. As you know, under the rule, cryptosporidium for purposes of the rule, crypto is crypto is crypto. The rule doesn't differentiate between the subtypes of crypto that are known to make humans sick and those that aren't known to make humans sick. So this is that genotyping that we've talked about in the past, that we've tried to push the rule for a rule revision where we would determine infectivity, determine the subtype of cryptosporidium if found. And then the second one has to do with just the fact that we have some seasonal variation to our water that creates problems in our cryptosporidium sampling. We have come up with solutions that have been adopted and approved by the EPA, but the EPA is in going through a rule revision, and some of the revisions that they've proposed could jeopardize those changes. So those are the two specific areas on the methodology that we're very interested in.
And as the maker of the motion, Commissioner Novick, does that your intent with the language?
Yes.
To address those two issues?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'm happy to second the amendment for purpose of discussion.
All right. So it's on the table, and we can, again, have further discussion with staff now or at the end of the hearing and take testimony on that as well as on the rest of the package. Great. Thank you very much. Do we have people signed up to testify, Carla?
Yes, we have three people signed up. Please come on up. Richard Elmire, Floyd Jones, and Don Smallman.
Welcome. Go ahead and take it away, Richard, while the others get ready.
My name is Richard Elmire. Portland's 2013 federal legislative agenda says it supports policies and action to reduce the emissions of harmful greenhouse gases. The transport of coal through Portland by train and barge, destined for burning in China, is an immoral aiding and abetting of climate change. Portland's 2013 federal legislative agenda section on coal development and export contradicts its climate change policy by allowing for the possibility of coal shipments through the Pacific Northwest under certain conditions. If the city of Portland recognizes climate change, which it does, then there are no conditions under which the transport of coal through Portland can be condoned. None. The transport of coal through Portland by train and barge destined for burning in China is an immoral aiding and abetting of climate change. It is not acceptable under any conditions, period. Last night, President Obama forthrightly warned of climate change. He set the stage for unilateral regulatory action to cut down on carbon emissions. Quote, "If Congress won't act soon to protect future generations, I will. I will direct my cabinet to come up with executive actions we can take now and in the future to reduce pollution, prepare our communities for the consequences of climate change, and speed the transition to more sustainable sources of energy," unquote. One of those executive actions needs to be the stopping of coal exports planned for the Pacific Northwest. The Portland City Council is obliged to instruct its lobbyists to encourage President Obama to follow through on his pledge by stopping coal exports through our community. Portland's 2013 federal legislative agenda addresses climate change and coal exports, but Portland's 2013 state legislative agenda screams silence of both subjects. Why is that? Just moments ago, Portland accepted host city status for World Environment Day. How are you planning to explain to all the United Nations attendees, those coming for the no coal gathering, and the press, that the Portland City Council forgot to instruct its state lobbyists to support climate change prevention with no coal export legislation? The eyes of the nation, if not the world, will be on Portland June 5th, United Nations World Environment Day. The Portland City Council is going to have to do a hell of a lot better when it comes to real, credible actions to stop the export of coal through our city, our state, and the Pacific Northwest. Please don't embarrass us. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name's Floyd Jones. I'm with Friends of the Reservoirs, and I'm also speaking on behalf of Kent Crayford with the Portland Water Users Coalition. And we want to thank the City Council, and specifically Commissioner Novick for submitting the recent letter to the Oregon Health Authority requesting a deferral of reservoir projects. And we also want to acknowledge the letter from Congressman Blumenauer that echoes the position of the city and, you know, just make clear that we believe this speaks clearly as to the opportunity that exists now for real meaningful reform of the onerous requirements related to LT2, relief for the open reservoirs and relief for our source water. This was the city's stated federal priority last year. It was included in the draft rule, and we appreciate the amendment that was offered, and I think that's an acceptable amendment. You know, given Commissioner Fritz's hard work over the many years, that lays a really good foundation, as well as the letter that was submitted now to put together a really strong, to work closely with the delegation to put together a really strong effort to produce a win at this point. We've been working on this issue for many years, and it's time to produce that win. I won't read for you the whole list of all of the organizations that support this effort, but it's a very long list. We've consistently worked with these organizations to support relief. I'll just name a few of them: Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Portland Water Users Coalition, Central East Side Industrial Council, the Portland Business Alliance, the Audubon Society, Oregon Wild, BARC, Coalition for a Livable Future, or Southeast Uplift Coalition of 20 Neighborhoods. So there's very strong support, and let's make this happen this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Oh, there's a little button right there to push to make that light up. There you go.
There we go. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Dawn Smallman. I'm a homeowner in the Mount Tabor neighborhood and a neighborhood association member. I should say up front, I've also submitted some written testimony from the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association for the record here today. And then from here on out, these comments are my own. First, I wanted to say thank you for your continued efforts to fight the EPA's costly and unnecessary LT2 rule. I'd especially like to thank Commissioner Fritz for her ongoing advocacy on this issue, and thanks to Commissioner Novick for writing the letter to the Oregon Health Authority that has reopened the conversation about this issue at the state level. Thank you to Mayor Hales for including the fight to reform the LT2 regulations as one of the city's 2013 federal legislative agenda priorities in the report here today. Also, I'd like to just publicly acknowledge and thank Congressman Blumenauer for addressing the issue with the Oregon Health Authority recently. In August, I attended the City Community Forum that was led by Commissioner Fritz, where the public comment was taken and tallied to help represent the public opinion in the city's 2013 legislative priorities. In that meeting, fighting the LT2 rule and getting relief from this rule as it applied to our drinking water source and infrastructures, including the historic open reservoirs, was ranked as the highest priority. I'm here today asking you that you modify the proposed 2013 legislative agenda to specifically include language that includes mention of our protecting our open reservoirs. Throughout the many years, so many people from the public have voiced these opinions of ongoing support of maintaining the open reservoirs, so you all know that the public support is there on this issue. If science and common sense are to be part of the fight against the application of a one-size-fits-all, extremely costly LT2 rule and mandate, then it also means that we should fight for our proven-to-be-healthy method of delivering public drinking water via our open reservoir system. Please include protecting them in the language of this year's legislative agenda, including a common sense, site-specific risk mitigation approach as a far more frugal alternative option to address and mitigate any concerns specific to our individual reservoirs. Thank you very much for your continued efforts on these.
Thank you. Questions? Please.
Oh, I guess it's my turn. Let me scoot up. I'm a little short stuff on the table here. Good morning, Mayor Charles Hales. Nice to see you this morning, looking well.
Thank you.
I'm glad to see that. Good morning, Commissioner Amanda Fritz. You're looking well. You always look so nice. Good morning, Commissioner Steve Novick. Nice to see you. And good morning, Commissioner Dan Salzman. Good to see you. You always look well. A-okay. Good morning, Nick Fish, Commissioner. You're doing a great job on Project Warm Fuzzy. Now,
State your name for the record. Don't forget.
I am Veronica Bernier, and I'm a graduate of Portland State. I'm a former MICU nurse of 30 years duration. I'm a Red Cross DAT damage assessment trainee, and we're out here in the field working, trying to help this place get better. One of our concerns, of course, is staying warm during the winter, and I understand the needs about coal and stuff like that. I just wanted to bring forward some of the prior proposals that came through about energy and fuel with regard to this city have been many. Commissioner Randy Leonards came through with a real interesting proposal about using alternative fuel for cars, and that was a green fuel objective. It was Frutahall, I think it was, and that was his idea about fuel for cars. But we're talking about people fuel, coal, and staying warm and stuff like that. I'm from Connecticut. I'm a Connecticut Yankee in King Charles Court, so to speak. That was a funny. You can laugh if you want. Okay. Well, anyway, I'm used to shoveling coal. We shovel coal to stay warm during the winter, and I understand the needs. I just want to point out some public health interest factions here. With coal, there's a lot of coal dust. Be really careful. The miners that mine the coal, that's a thing that's real important, too. Along with the coal goes kind of a lot of indigenous diseases, and one of them is a lung disease, what they call coal miner's lung. I just want to stress the need to be safe with any process you use to warm up. That includes heating oil, coal, logs, of course. We don't want to burn any logs that have poison sumac on them. You know, it might get poison oak in your lungs. But the main thing to do is be very safe with any process that's used for heating, especially as it relates to the people, the families, and little children. And just remember the past. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And do we have anyone else signed up to testify on this?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Martha, just a question maybe, and Martha and Nils. So given the obviously this was drafted prior to the President's State of the Union speech, and as Mr. Ellmeyer pointed out, he did bring up the question or the possibility of executive action on the coal issue, not just congressional action or regulatory decision-making. Do you think our statement as it now stands, with maybe some council comments on the subject, gives us a basis for being active on executive actions, or do we need to change the language?
Thank you, Mayor. I do feel like we have, the issues called out sort of specifically in the agenda. If the president issues some executive action, I don't see any reason why this council hasn't already forecasted their interest on the topic. And that council could weigh in on that.
Other questions for Martha and Nels? Great. I believe that we are ready to adopt the report.
With the motion.
To adopt.
Wait a minute, we got to take up the amendment first.
Yeah.
Sorry. So we have an amendment on the table. And any further discussion on the amendment? If not, then we'll take a vote on the proposed amendments.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, and now the report as amended, please.
A motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Fritz?
Well, thank you to Martha Pellegrino and your wonderful staff in the Office of Government Relations and to the entire council for participating and for our entire community for participating. We had 250 people attending our lobbying legislative lobbying training, and many, many more participating in some way or another over the course of the last year to help set this agenda. So I feel very comfortable that it does reflect the community's concerns as well as the elected leaders' concerns. Particularly thank Tim Crail in my office and Stephanie Mendoza Gray in your office for their stalwart work in the community involvement piece. My new colleague, Commissioner Novick, who acted very quickly when this was brought to our attention, when the issue with the reservoirs was brought to our attention by the diligent folks in the community who are watching it. I had seen it in the draft and
had not caught that particular detail. So thank you, Commissioner Novick. It's an absolute joy to be working with you at short notice, and to the rest of the council for also being willing to make changes at the end. It just proves you can have a whole several months long process, and people coming in at the end or sending emails at the end can and do make a difference. That's the kind of city that we live in. That's the state and the federal government that we live in, and I very much appreciate being a part of it. Aye.
Fish.
Martha and Niels, thank you very much. Job well done. Commissioner Fritz, thank you for ensuring a robust public involvement through this process. This is a very comprehensive agenda and ambitious agenda, but it reflects our core values, and every year we get some wins. This in the year of sequestration and gridlock, this may be our most challenging year ever, but we are blessed to have a fantastic government relations team that guides us in this work. So thank you both for your outstanding work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
I want to echo Commissioner Fritz's thanks to the members of the community, to Martha and her team, and to my fellow council members for putting this agenda together. There's just a few things I wanted to note. One is the fact that our federal agenda is aligned with our city priorities and our state priorities. I mean, it's critical for the federal government to continue and augment and restore its investment in affordable housing. It's critical for the federal government to implement the Affordable Care Act, partly because both of those things will help us keep the city safe, because there's people who get involved with the criminal justice system partly because they have no housing, they have no mental health care, alcohol and addiction treatment, and the Affordable Care Act will hopefully help ensure that they get that care, which is important in and of itself, and also I think it'll make a contribution to public safety. There's one thing I specifically wanted to call out. We state in our Portland Harbor Superfund and Brownfields item that we support Congressman Blumenauer's efforts to pass the Superfund Reinvestment Act, which would reinstate the financing of the Superfund program. And I applaud the Congressman for his continued work on this issue. One thing that I think that people might not know is that the Superfund used to be partly funded by a tax on the oil and chemical industries, which the Congressman wants to restore. Newt Gingrich decided to kill that tax in 1995 when I happened to be working for the Federal Justice Department doing environmental law, including Superfund cases. And one of the most annoying things about Newt Gingrich killing that tax is that the oil industry has a special exemption from site-specific Superfund liability from the beginning. It was called the petroleum exclusion. So they are not on the hook for site-specific Superfund liability arising for petroleum products, but the fact that there was a tax that applied to them kind of made up for that. But then the tax was killed, so in one of the more dramatic demonstrations of the power of the oil industry in this country, they don't have to pay for site-specific liability, and they don't have to pay for a tax to make up for that. So I really hope that somehow after 18 years, Congressman Blumenauer succeeds in restoring the Superfund tax. That being said, I vote aye.
Hills.
Well, I want to thank our team and our community for putting together this good agenda. You know, I think looking at both our state legislative agenda and this one, I think we have a chance to be influential for several reasons. One, because we do have a short list of key priorities. Two, they have a special bearing on the situation of Portland. And three, we do have broad community support for what we've put into this document. And we have to follow up on that, not simply by adopting these reports and going on record, but then investing time, as I know we all are, in the process. I'm heartened about a couple of these issues in the terms of the investment of my time already. I've gotten a little bit involved in the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and I see a lot of activism among mayors around the country on some of these issues, immigration reform, gun violence, and climate change. Cities are being visited with the direct results of climate change as we speak. Take see East Coast, because they've gotten the worst brunt of it lately. So I think we as cities have a chance to be influential because we see these results firsthand. We have to deal with the practical realities. And again, we have a short list that has a lot of community support behind it. So I think this is a good agenda. It's our job to go advocate for it, signing on to coalitions like Mayors for Marriage Equality or Mayors Against Gun Violence is one thing that I've done, but I'll also put time and effort behind that, and I hope all of us continue to do that and be able to say at the end of this session of Congress and this session of the legislature that we made a difference and got some of this done. So thank you for good work. Aye.
Thank you.
All right. We have a couple of regular agenda items. Carla?
Item 134, authorize grant agreements of up to $30,000 for energy efficiency improvements in small commercial buildings using $340,000 in federal grant funding.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, council members. I'm Michael Armstrong. I am responsible for the sustainability programs in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. If I can, I'd like to just describe quickly what's in this ordinance and then answer any questions you might have. So the ordinance in front of you would authorize the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to provide grants of up to $30,000 to fund energy efficiency improvements in small commercial buildings. As we've actually heard several times this morning, and I think you're all aware, energy efficiency has been a priority for the city in our own operations as well as throughout the community for several decades now. It's really one of the best ways that we have to keep business and household costs low, to create jobs, to reduce carbon emissions. The funding for the grants, so that would flow through the city and out to these small businesses, is part of a larger U.S. Department of Energy grant that Portland competed for and won 3 years ago now, two and a half years ago now. Most of that grant was for single-family homes, and that's the funding that has supported Clean Energy Works Oregon, which helps single-family homes install energy efficiency improvements and has now retrofit several thousand homes. A small chunk of that funding was set aside for commercial buildings, and that's the piece that's in front of you now. The ordinance in front of you would enable us to provide the commercial funding directly to the businesses that that are installing the improvements in these small buildings. Specifically, this is focused on energy improvements in buildings of up to 50,000 square feet. The funds would pay for the 50% of the eligible cost of the energy efficiency part, or for nonprofit organizations, it would pay 75%. The total amount is $30,000, so it's capped at that. This would pay for things like insulation, heating and cooling equipment, lighting and controls, in some cases food service equipment. It's all intended to work side by side with the Energy Trust of Oregon incentives, so this is all integrated to make it easy for contractors, for the building owners, as well as consistent. We have a limited amount of funding, and so we're putting it out, proposing to put it out on a first-come, first-served basis. The funds have to be spent by the end of the federal fiscal year, so we're eager to get it out there as quickly as practical. And then lastly, for very small buildings, those under 10,000 square feet, we also have the ability to offer technical assistance to help figure out exactly what improvements the building needs, so people can call and request that assistance and then figure out if there's a project they can do that would help them access these funds. So historically, small commercial buildings have been extremely difficult to reach. Our hope with this, you know, relatively small amount of money is to support building owners to make these improvements and then learn from that as to what the barriers are and how we can help them continue to make those improvements going forward. Hopefully also position ourselves and our businesses to get access to more federal funds as they become available. So I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Mayor, I have one question. Michael, it looks like a wonderful program. The one piece that I'm still not clear about is the first come, first serve. And that, I've been trying to think of other programs where we reward sort of the first in. You know, most of our programs, we set a deadline for people to apply, then we rank them, evaluate them. We have some criteria designed to make sure that there's geographic distribution or equity or whatever our values are. And my only concern with first come, first serve is it might reward people that are either in the game or have a special connection to this program and might end up limiting the reach of the program. And I wondered if you considered any other, and I realize it's a small amount of money, and if we're talking about a maximum rebate of $30,000, it could be as few as, you know, 13, 14 projects. But did you consider any other method for evaluating that was other than, you know, who was first to the door?
We did, and it's a really good point. And I think a lot of this goes to the need to spend the funds quickly and really to learn from them. So in essence, viewing this as a pilot program where we need to have a number of buildings go through this process and understand what has kept them from doing it up to now. So a little bit of money to help them actually complete the project and then figure out how we can help others do it on an ongoing basis. Part of this obviously is funding. And, you know, we wrestled some with the first come, first served bit as well. We've tried by establishing the criteria for participation, as well as having various trade allies aware and sort of they're, you know, pending your consideration, they are eager to take this out. And it is a pretty broad reach. But it's true that the program is going to serve a relatively small number of actual projects. And so our intent is to view that as a pilot and learn from it.
So the companion question might be, how do you plan to market this or make people aware of this so that if we are doing this on a first come, first served basis, it's a fair contest among people who have been insiders and paying attention and those who don't fit those two descriptions?
Yeah, absolutely. So the key allies are sort of the people who are prepared to take this out. The business assistance program that we have at Planning and Sustainability called Sustainability at Work, who provide direct services to businesses, Portland Development Commission's business assistance, and then it's largely the trade allies. So there's an existing set of contractors known as trade allies who routinely work through the Energy Trust of Oregon programs. They are all aware of, you know, the likelihood of this program. And so because anyone who's going to do a project is almost certainly going to want to tap into the Energy Trust of Oregon, by reaching the contractors who serve those projects, I think we're pretty well positioned to make sure that anyone who might hit these criteria is going to be aware of this. Timing is always a challenge where, you know, anybody who did their improvement last year didn't have this opportunity. Anybody who's had been planning to do it next year, you know, unless they act now, they also will lose that opportunity. And that's unfortunately the situation we're in, where we have a limited time to use these dollars.
And I'm not suggesting that we create an enormous amount of bureaucratic headaches for you, but for example, during our budget work, you know, we divide the city into zones, and we look to see how are we delivering services and other things by zone. And that keeps the focus on making sure we're doing things in East Portland, North Portland, other places. And I wonder whether even a simple modification that says that there'll be some guarantee of geographic distribution and some allocation that modifies first come, first serve, so that when you come back to us with your with whatever you've learned from this, we can you know, say that we have spread this out throughout the city and captured the experience of small business, medium-sized businesses in every business district, and not just those who may be downtown or in a particularly well-organized business association.
I like that suggestion. Yeah.
Okay. Could you market them, as the mayor and Commissioner Fish said, for instance, in the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts?
Absolutely. So that's one of the other channels that are positioned to take this out. Mm. So it certainly is our intent to get the word, and in part by targeting this on smaller buildings, we're almost, by definition, expecting to reach buildings that historically have not been able to participate in these programs. I guess I only hesitate to say we absolutely can achieve a certain, you know, or sort of have quotas for geographic distribution, because I'd hate to leave money on the table and have it go back to the federal government and not get spent here in Portland. It is our intent to get this out through the neighborhoods, through the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative, through all of our business assistance programs. I welcome suggestions about other ways to make sure that we are getting this out as broadly as possible and really as quickly as possible.
I think what we're saying, at least what I would suggest, is you make the attempt to get some geographic distribution, but recognize that you need to get the money out the door. You have it for a limited amount of time, and we may not get applicants from every geographic area, but you make that effort. That's
right.
And absolutely, we will seek applicants from every geographic area, and maybe I can follow up with some specifics about how we're trying to do that, and then also enlist your assistance in connecting us on to others, because that's always helpful as well.
I think the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative suggestion is very good. The Venture Portland network of neighborhood business organizations, you know, there's some ways and means here we can use to try to get the word out to a lot of people simultaneously.
If the language is simply modified to say we're looking for geographic distribution, we're looking for for-profit, non-profit, and there's just a caveat thrown in that ultimately the final decision is at the discretion of the Bureau, then first come, first serve is your general rule. But I would carve out the discretion to be able to pick and choose if you have the luxury of more asks than the funding requires, so that you can come back to us and say that you made some judgment about the pool. But I don't believe under any contracting rules you're required to say absolutely first come, first serve. That may be your general rule. But I would build in discretion so that you can ensure that the values that we've identified are reflected in your selection.
And the very phrase first come, first served implies that we're waiting for people to come to us, whereas what I would like to see is that you go first to the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts. You go first to the underserved communities to tell them this is on the table. It is whoever applies first, but we're here to tell you about this program rather than, as has been pointed out, expecting people to come to us.
I think that's exactly right, and that is our intention.
Right.
Good discussion.
Do we need to amend the language at all, Commissioner Fish?
Well, let me ask our esteemed counsel. Do you feel like the sense of the counsel has been established on the record sufficient to give the Bureau guidance, or do you believe we need to amend the ordinance?
My understanding in working with staff on the project was that first come, first served was intended not so much as a goal as it was that they're trying to get the money out the door and they don't want to have money sitting waiting for additional applicants on some criteria. I think staff is well aware now of the council's desire to have geographic distribution as a goal in and of itself in the projects. And it really is up to council. If council is satisfied that staff has gotten the message, then I don't think an amendment is necessary, but it's up to the council's prerogative.
So I would be satisfied, Mayor, if it's the sense of the council that we want there to be robust outreach, and that to the extent the director has exercises her discretion, some consideration for geographic distribution, I'm satisfied that that's the sense of the council and does not have to be reflected in the ordinance.
Mayor, Commissioner Fish, just from a nitpicking standpoint, I just wonder, I mean, the ordinance does refer to the language of Exhibit A, and Exhibit A does have this sentence about first come, first served. I mean, just to be as clean as possible, would there be any problem with amending it to just delete that language, and with the understanding that the city does know what we want the city to do? Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm just a little uncomfortable with leaving that language in there as an attachment to the ordinance.
And this is an exhibit that's attached to the ordinance, so it's in effect the rules and procedures for this program. So actually, I like that suggestion, which is that if we deleted that line but had a sense of the council that there's going to be an aggressive outreach effort for geographical diversity, that we're going to use existing mechanisms like Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts and Venture Portland's network of neighborhood business associations, but that first come, first serve is the default or baseline for this program. We're going to do better than that at every opportunity. If I don't believe we have to have that in Exhibit A for you to proceed, as long as that's the sense of the council. So I would.
So Mayor, then if that's Steve's amendment, I would say let's extend it to from Exhibit A also to Exhibit B, Recital 2.
Right.
So we're consistent. And we're simply saying we have this financial incentive program. We understand first come, first serve is the default, but we've given the sense of the council we'd like to see robust outreach and geographic distribution.
And I was deleted also from Section 5 of the findings.
I'll second the motion.
And let me ask Council, is there any problem with us from a contracting standpoint if we do this? I don't think so.
If we could be a little more specific in the amendment to Recital 2 of Exhibit B, if we could strike the language about first-come, first-served financial incentives,
just
so it says provide support for energy efficiency in small buildings, because otherwise that is part of the intent of the program.
Hmm. Okay.
It is providing financial incentives, though. So couldn't we just delete first-come, first-served?
You could do that.
Yeah.
So I second that motion, which would amend the documents as has been articulated by Commissioners Novick and Fritz.
Okay. So we are, in several instances, going to delete the reference to first-come, first-served, but then leave the remainder of the recitals and provisions in Exhibit A and this record of the Council's instructions to the Bureau should be sufficient to the task. Any further Council discussion? Is there anyone else that's signed up to testify on this?
No one else signed up.
Okay, Michael, thank you. Then let's take a vote on the package of proposed amendments. Is there a motion? It's already moved, so vote on the amendments, please.
Fritz?
I greatly appreciate the on-the-spot amendment to make this better. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then this is an emergency ordinance, so let's vote on the ordinance itself as amended.
Fritz?
Thanks to staff for this program. It is part of the $20 million that we got from the federal government, and so it implements the last part of that program. And so now that we've been thoroughly aired that it's available and that people should hurry up and sign up for it, that I appreciate the work that's been done and will be done. Aye.
Fish?
I want to thank the Obama administration for actually making stimulus funds available to cities like Portland. And we've used them not only around energy efficiency, but also in affordable housing and many other core projects in our city. So I thank the administration for that. And I also join with Commissioner Fritz in saying I thought this was a very constructive conversation. Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
I want to thank the Council for improving this initiative and want to compliment the Bureau for you know, maybe it's a little flippant to refer to $340,000 as some money that was sort of rattling around in the drawer, but they, in a sense, found a very creative way to make sure that all these funds get used for community improvement, to create jobs, and to make Portland a more energy-efficient city. Very, very appreciative of the good work. Aye. Okay. Item 135, please.
Vacate a portion of Northeast Sumner Street west of Northeast 14th Place, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Good morning.
Hello. My name is Lance Lindahl. I'm with Right-of-Way Acquisition, Portland Bureau of Transportation. Before you today is a proposal to vacate an unimproved portion of Northeast Sumner Street, approximately 5,000 square feet in size, located west of Northeast 14th Place. The street vacation was initiated by Mr. Guy Skeel, the owner of the abutting property to the north. The stated purpose of the street vacation is to eliminate the dumping of garbage and other debris along the unimproved public street. City bureaus have determined this dedicated area is no longer needed and are in support of this vacation as proposed. I'm available to answer any questions you have about this, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else here to testify?
So how will vacating this property improve the dumping of trash or situation?
The homeowners to the north and south have recently moved into this neighborhood, and they would like to see this land revert back to their private property lots and improve it with new sidewalks, new lawn, and garden space.
I'm always confused about this. Is this particular procedure that we follow subject to remonstrances, or is it just whether we get or does the public have an opportunity to weigh in and either support or oppose this prior to the hearing?
Yeah, the public gets to weigh in at both the Bureau level, also at the Planning and Sustainability Commission level. They have a hearing on it.
Have there been any complaints? Have we had any opposition to this?
There's been no opposition at all on this one.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. This moves to second reading. And item 136, please.
Assess property for sidewalk repair by the Bureau of Maintenance.
Second reading roll call, please.
Fritz.
Does this include the amendment to take out the one property that we discussed last week?
I believe so.
Yes, the new ordinance was in your packet.
It is the revised ordinance.
Yes.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye, and we are recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon. Thank you.
Are you going to unpack tonight?
I think I'm not, but I probably should be. I'm not sure what happened there. I am going to something tonight, so.
If you could go even for the first half hour, I have.